Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the hottest internet radio show and podcast, The Author's Lab, a place for an eclectic and lively discussion of the dynamic world of writing, publishing, and marketing of the written word. I'm the sage, the host, Robert Batista. Follow me on Twitter at author R. Batista, and make it a point to follow The Author's Lab on Blog Talk Radio. Today, we are honored to have as our guest author, retired veteran, and so much more, Tommy Anderson. Tommy, welcome to the Author's Lab.
Oh, Robert, thank you so much. I'm very pleased and happy that you have me as a guest today.
Tommy, as a veteran myself, the first thing I'd like to say is thank you for your long list of service to our nation. Besides being in the U.S. Army, Army National Guard, and Air National Guard, you also spent 25 years in public service as a police deputy and dispatcher, firefighter, and medic. Wow, what a resume. Thank you, Tommy.
No, thank you. Actually, it was my honor to be able to do the things that I loved.
So, in my estimation, the next logical move after retiring is to tell stories and become a writer. You started out first in magazines. How did that come about, and what were some of the articles you wrote?
Well, I was initially one of the last things I did in the military. I was a deputy fire chief with the Department of Defense Air Force, and I was in charge of training. So I wrote articles for different magazines like Fire Engineering, Firehouse Magazine. I would do some technical reporting and after-action incident reports. And then I got into more of a photojournalism, especially with the American Legion and some other groups. And I wrote some articles for Vietnam veterans, of America's Magazine, for the Air Force Times, the Army Times, and a couple of publications like that. And it sort of morphed into me doing articles for car magazines. And I got involved in the California car culture and started going to car shows and getting to know a lot of the drivers and knowing a lot of the vehicle owners, and I wrote articles about them. And along the way, everybody said, well, you need to write a book sometime about all the things that you've done in your different careers and traveling around the country. And I said, yeah, I've often thought about it, but I got to settle down for a while to do it. And which I can attest that I used to be on the go all the time. And for me, it was nothing to go to two or three different shows a week. But then I had an accident in I re-injured an accident I had in the fire department in 2015. I was laid up for about 8 weeks recuperating. And at that time, I made the decision, now's the time for me to maybe step back from those activities and start actually writing books. And that's what I did.
Yeah, that leads me into my next question. Then you're ready, as you said, for the next jump, the next step, a novel. Where did the inspiration
yes.
come? Where did the inspiration come to write Haboob Wind?
Well, I had first I want to explain Haboob Wind is the definition is a violent Arabic sand or windstorm, and it's a metaphor
okay.
that I used for terrorism spreading across the United States in my novel. And I got the inspiration from some of my background in the military and in public safety and disaster preparedness, and then with current events that were going on. And I saw a fertile ground for all the seeds of a thriller based on actual world events.
With your background, Tommy, it would seem like writing such a story would be relatively easy, was it?
No, it wasn't easy. I mean, the idea of coming up with it wasn't too bad, but then to put it into some type of logical flow, building characters, building different situations, it took a couple of years. And then I had to, I did some research along with some of the lines that I was going with some of my speculation. And so before I actually had it into my first rough draft was probably 2 years. And then after that was through the editing process, back and forth, and making corrections, changes in some of the characters' backgrounds, things like that.
Now, research is such a big part of writing a lot of books. I would think militaristic books as well. Did you do a lot of research for Habub Wind?
I did research with, fortunately, I work a lot with the historical aspects of aviation. I'm a colonel in the Commemorative Air Force. I work with a lot of military museums. I'm involved with Living History. So I'm around all kinds of data, all kinds of people that I can tap into. And some of the associations I belong with, I can talk to the actual pilots of certain aircraft to get the different flaws or characteristics of different planes. And so that wasn't too bad. It was just a little time-consuming. And I did some other research, mainly online, going into some of the military think tanks to look at some of their material that they had.
So you've finished the manuscript, everything is dotted and crossed, and you're ready for publication. How was Habub Wind published, and did you have any challenges in the publishing process?
Well, there's always challenges. These days, with the rise of self-publishing and all the companies out there that will publish your book for you and everything, I had a great staff. I went through a amazing marketing and book design company out of San Diego. They're called Monkey See Media, and they guided me along the way. They did my cover design, my book. Everything went through the editing with their editing staff. And what we did is we formed my own publishing company that I registered here in California called Coyote Mountain Publishing. And I have Ingram Press print my books for me, and it allowed me some bargaining power with them for negotiation on my royalties, prices, discount to bookstores. Whereas if you just do one of these, I can't think of all of them that are out there.
I think Lulu is one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if CreateSpace is still around or not, but anyhow, you don't have those options. You don't own your ISBN number. Places like where I'm at now, Barnes & Noble and some other bookstores, won't accept your self-published book because
right.
The rates that those companies set up, there's no margin for them to make any money. By this way, I can set the margin so they're willing to put my books in their stores.
Habub Wind is ripped from the headlines, fast-paced thriller set in 2021. One of the weapons used by the terrorists in your book is an electronic pulse weapon, EPW. Can you explain to those listening what exactly this is?
Well, one of the things that I did in working with the public in Living History, and you notice how our lives are so entwined around the internet and cell phones and mobile communications.
Right.
My car's got a computer in it that's more expensive than probably anything in my house, and you probably do too. And I wanted to build a scenario where what would happen if everything was taken away at one point and nobody had any of this stuff, which has always been the fear of electronic pulse weapons. And being in fiction, I could create a scenario where it would be so vast it would take out everything and basically plunge the United States back in history 150 years. And they would have to reestablish communications. They'd have to learn to fight back. Everything without using the modern tools that we have now. And I could just envision, you know, people all of a sudden, you know, you don't carry cash anymore. You're ATM. You have no access to money. You have no lights. You have no communications. And just the panic that would grow if that happened, let alone the military being blinded.
Oh, so this is similar to, like, taking down the whole entire grid, you would say then?
Right, right.
Okay.
It's basically taking everything down in the country. And in the book, what I don't want to give too much of it away, but in the book, I also have these terrorist cells that come alive during this attack that have been here for a while, and they've embedded themselves within different levels of government. And they start sabotaging different key areas of the grid where if they could get it repaired, they can't repair it because something's been destroyed. So I try to make it as apocalyptic as I could. And unfortunately, I made it a little too much because some people are actually scared about it, which might be a good thing.
Yeah, there are a lot of doomsayers that say that our grid can be taken down at any moment, and a lot of people definitely fear that. I myself went through Hurricane Sandy when we were out of power for like 7 or 8 days, and it is not a good thing. So, you know, taking down the grid for months or years at a time would be definitely chaotic. So, oh, about your book, I love the title, and you already explained what that meant. And the cover is pretty attention-grabbing also. Did you design the cover, or did the company design it for you?
The company did that. Monkey C did that. And they work closely with – I have to give a big shout-out to my partner and all this, my partner, my publicist, Susan Freese out of San Diego with SJF Communications.
Right.
She has been a powerhouse with distribution. And these are all things that if you want to be a successful author, you have to have in place. You can't do it without assistance.
Tommy, you have graciously agreed to read a portion of your book for us. Can you do this now and set up the part you're reading?
Yeah, I can do that. I don't know. I have to ask you a question. Is it going to be open at all for people to call in today?
Yes, they can just call the same number, and they can call in and be on the show.
Okay, because I think there might be a, like, from the studio might call in, and my publicist also. But what I'm going to read from is in my – it's in the chapter I call New Beginnings, and it's what comes to light with the FBI – is that terrorists have planted some type of nuclear device within MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. And this little snippet that I'm going to read is about the team going in to find these and disarm them. Okay, this is where I'm going. Agent, we know the truck was stolen 2 weeks ago from a terminal in Baltimore, Maryland. Our bomb and hazardous materials team detected the presence at some point of explosives and radioactive material in the trailer, Detective Remington reported. The body of the manager was found in one of the appliance boxes, and it was the maintenance supervisor, Alan Wall. He was the supervisor of the entire MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. Because of the multiple states involved, the victim and the perp and the bomb detection reported, we thought possibly terrorism, and that's why we contacted the FBI. I'm afraid you're right, Detective Agent Hansen answered. Looking at Agent Grafton, he said, Sue, contact the field office in Newark, fill them in and tell them that we're heading there to coordinate the response to MetLife Stadium. Have them send some undercover units to sit on the stadium till our team gets there and keeps an eye on things. 2 hours later, the team was at the FBI headquarters in Newark, meeting with the Bureau's regional SWAT and bomb disposal hazardous materials response team, planning a no-knock raid of the stadium for 9 p.m. Agents Grafton and Hamilton, along with the leaders of two FBI teams, Agent Hansen said, we're going to go in without any warning, breaching four doors encompassing the stadium. We need speed and stealth because we don't know if any suspected terrorists are there, but we must assume they are. There must be 20-plus concession stands in the stadium, so look at each one for the model number on the refrigerators we took off the boxes in the trailer. When you find one, don't touch it, secure it, and radio your location to the EOD specialist so they can get to you. It was a few minutes after 9 p.m. Eastern time that the four access doors on each side of the stadium were breached, and the team slipped quietly into the stadium. Within minutes, all four teams had reached and secured their first concession stand, but none of them contained a specific refrigerator. They radioed in their status and advised that they were moving to the next one. Agent Hansen's, Grafton, and Hamilton were with insertion team number two at their third concession stand when they confronted a maintenance supervisor coming out of the area. With about 20 feet between them, Agent Hansen yelled out, FBI, don't move up. Identify yourself. With this, his hands went above his head, and the man answered, I'm the maintenance supervisor, Bruce Cannon. What's going on? The team leader motioned for Cannon to lower his arms, which he did, and Agent Hansen asked, we're going to need your help in locating the concession stands. We have a report of a threat. How many of you do have working here tonight? Cannon answered, I have about 10 other guys working tonight. Should I be worried? Hansen replied, you'll be okay. Can you let your men know that we are here searching the area? Have them all leave via the nearest exit point with their hands up, and we'll guide them away from the building. Before Canahan could answer, the echo of automatic gunfire rang out through the deserted stadium walkways. Looking surprised, Canahan pulled out a 9mm handgun from the small of his back and fired into the squad of FBI agents. With Agent Grafton yelling out in pain, almost simultaneously, the multiple weapons were fired by the FBI team as Canahan's body was riddled with bullets. The team leader radioed out to all of the teams, assume all civilians are hostile. Yeah.
Sounds gripping, gripping. And what's funny is I live about 10 minutes away from Giant Stadium. So you definitely got my attention.
Well, I have friends in New Jersey, and I'm sure they're listening now who had said the same thing.
So we have a caller on the line at 661-345, and would you like to say something to Tommy Anderson?
Hi, Tommy. It's Char.
Oh, hi, Char.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. This is Char Yonan, one of the executive producers with Global Edge Pictures in Hollywood.
Nice, nice. How you doing, Char?
Hi, how are you? I'm doing great. I'm fantastic. How are you today?
Great, great, and welcome to the show. So what we'll do is we'll just continue with the show. And, Tommy, a five-star Amazon review of your book by Laurie Kay states in part, T.M. Anderson's words painted a picture in my mind as I read his book. I am one for details, and I love the details and explanations so that I totally understand and understood what was going on. The characters came to life. The best way I can explain it is that I did not read this book in black and white. I read it in full color, for that's how they appeared in my mind. Wow, Tommy, great review. You write in full color.
That was fantastic.
And that's no small feat, huh?
No, it's not. And that's one of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to paint the story so that people could actually see it in their mind.
Yeah, and it sounds like you did a fantastic job by that review. So, Tommy, on September 11, 2001, I was inside the bowels of the World Trade Center waiting for my train to pull out. Needless to say, being in NYC and experiencing that attack firsthand is still traumatic for me. Now, Tommy, where were you, and how did you spend that day?
Well, I was off duty from the fire department that day, and I got a call saying that a plane had hit the World Trade Center. So I, like a lot of other Americans, I turned on the TV and watched. And then I worried about, you know, friends that I knew both on the New York City Police Department and the fire department, because
right.
I knew what they would be going through. And I could sense when I saw the towers fall, I knew what happened. I knew where these guys would be because I'd been in high-rise fires myself. And, you know, I worried about my friends who turned out to be all right. But, you know, so many of the heroes there weren't, along with the civilians. It was such a traumatic experience for the whole country.
Yes, indeed. Let's talk about Habib Win being optioned for a film. How did this come about, Tom?
Well, here, Shar can address that. Are you still there, Shar?
Okay.
I'm still here. So it came
okay.
about where Tommy and I met, and we both had a lot in common, and we became friends first. We're both originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we met, and he gave me a copy of his book, and I read, and it was very vivid, ingrained in my mind. The way he presented his material, very well written book. And I presented it to my producing partner at Global Edge Pictures. And we had a meeting with Tom, and we optioned for it to be turned into a screenplay. We see great potential, and we are currently working on the project and in pre-production mode at this time. And here we are.
Wow, that sounds so exciting. Tommy, we also have another caller on the line from 973-960. Hello, would you like to say hi to Tommy?
Hi, Tom, it's Kat Healy.
Hey, Kat,
hey.
How are you, hon?
I'm good, how are you? Hi, Char.
Hi.
Anyway,
wow,
it's funny you read that MetLife part, because the day I was reading that part in the book was the exact same day this particular event was happening in the book. I'm reading it. I'm looking at the date. I went, that's today. I'm like, that was scary.
That's amazing. So, Tommy,
yeah.
how does it differ writing the screenplay versus the book? Which is harder?
Well, the screenplay for me was harder because it's a passage. Shar and I kind of went down, and we went through a couple of screenplay writers that had a hard time with it, and I just finally said, I'll do it. And once I got going into it, it wasn't so bad. But you take the essence of the book. And you create the same story but different. You maybe elaborate on some of the situations. You might create new situations. You put more depth into the characters. You give some of the characters more presence in the movie. You have to be concerned with like 360 degrees around you in every direction about what's going on besides you know, two people talking, you have to have, okay, there's traffic in the background, there's noise, things like that. It gets really involved. And, you know, I feel really accomplished with doing it. I know Char does.
Right, and there's a lot of strong character developments in that. And then when you're reading the book, there's so many characters involved. So, of course, you have to narrow that down and get your main antagonist involved and build on those characters. So Tommy did a great job.
Kudos, Tommy. And I see we have another call. We have another caller on the line, and it's 858-461. Hi, would you like to say hi to Tommy?
I absolutely would. This is Susan Farese, Tommy's publicist,
hey, Susan.
Calling. And hi, Char. We'll have to get together sometime in L.A. I just want to just give a shout-out that I'm so proud of what you've done. We've been working together, Tommy and I, for about a year now, and he has been relentless in driving from city to city in the San Diego area, the L.A. area, the Inland Empire, and he's still cooking with this book. And I just want to thank him for all his effort, and I have a question on what are some of the challenges when you drive all over and maybe there's a few people at a bookstore or a library or there's many? How do you adapt to that, and how do you feel about all the different people you've met, that kind of thing?
Well, I've met so many interesting people, and I have to say the staff at these different places have been amazing and welcoming. Barnes & Noble, I have to give a shout-out to them. They've been so accompanying or so helpful with doing these signs and presentations, the different libraries, associations. You've laid the groundwork for a lot of that, and it's all been a good experience. Whether I have one person there or a dozen, it's all a learning experience, and I get different questions from every place. So
exactly.
It helps me, too.
That's great. And what do you think the customers should do when they come to see you? Is there any helpful hints? Someone that might be shy or just, you know, hesitant to approach you and that kind of thing. What do you do
just
to welcome them?
Just I start talking to them as Lydia can attest to. I can talk to anybody anywhere about anything.
Yeah.
And I can walk into a facility or a convention or something where I don't know anybody, and I'll probably have a half a dozen friends by the time I leave. And I'm very good at talking to people off the cuff about different things. I try to stay well-versed in a lot of different areas, and so I always feel comfortable in talking. So don't be shy. Come on up and talk to me. And I don't know. I want to relate one thing that I had at one of the Barnes and Nobles, and I don't really mean to get political on the air here, but I had a gentleman come up to me, and it was kind of busy. And the gentleman came up. He was from, I want to say, either Pakistan or India, in that general area. And he come up and said, "Mr. Tommy," in with his accent. I said, "Yes." And he says, "You're an American veteran." I says, "Yes, I am." And he says, "Please, please help us protect our president." And I said, "I will." And that's all I'm going to say. And I can talk to anybody about anything. And I meet so many interesting people. That day, I never expected to hear that.
Hmm.
I honestly didn't, especially in California and certain areas. And it actually warmed my heart to hear somebody from another country say that, who originally came from another country.
Hmm.
That's very interesting. So, Tommy, in a time where hundreds of thousands of books are published every year on so many different types of platforms, many authors want to know how they can make their book stand out from all the rest. How do you handle this, Tommy? How do you handle the marketing aspect of being an author?
Well, I tell them you have to be out there. You can't just sit back and expect it to fly off the shelves. You have to have an amazing publicist, which I do, and is not afraid to get you out there. You have to be willing to get up before a group of 20 people or get up before a group of 400 people and talk about your book, answer questions. You have to be willing to do things even if you're tired. If somebody wants you to come do an event, you have to be part of it, because in this business, if you're not, you'll be left at the wayside. And you surround yourself with a good team. You have the Monkey See people designed me a great book cover. It's catchy. It caught people. They saw that cover and say, "Oh, wait, what's this?" I mean, you have to do. You can't do it yourself. I mean, every now and then somebody can create the book and do a good cover and it takes off. But I think those are very rare. It takes a team. And you got to be willing to work with other people and take suggestions and realize when you're wrong, even though a couple people on the phone here will know that sometimes I don't think they're right, but they are.
Speaking of being on the phone, I have a couple of extra things to mention if Robert has time for this.
Well, yes, please do it quickly because we're almost done.
Social media for Tommy Anderson, Facebook, at Haboob Wind, H-A-B-O-O-B, Wind, all one word, lowercase. Twitter, Tommy Anderson 12. IG, Instagram, Tommy _Anderson_author. Thank you.
So, Tommy, in closing,
yes.
In all the years of your service, in all your diverse careers, what would you say is your proudest accomplishment?
My proudest accomplishment?
Yeah.
Being a friend and family guy. And I think when you're true to yourself and to your friends, it makes you feel good about everything else you do.
Excellent point. So what's next for Tommy Anderson? What new irons do you have in the fire coming up?
Well, I've got a book I finished, and it hasn't been edited yet. It's called 2 Million Steps. It's the historical novel on the Civil War. I based it around my great-great-grandfather, who was with the 25th Wisconsin Volunteer Infantry with General Sherman. And they suffered the highest number of casualties of any Union regiment in the Southern Campaign. And they were in some of the worst fighting in the Southern Campaign. And it took me about 10 years to do that with the research. I did a lot of traveling. I did a lot of research in museums, even in Washington, D.C. And so I can't wait for that to actually come to fruition and be put out in print.
Sounds like an interesting story. So if people want to get in contact with you, she's already gave out your Twitter handle and anything else. Do you have any websites or any other way to be contacted?
Well, they can contact me through Instagram. It's Tommy Anderson Author on Instagram. Also Facebook and through HaboobWind.com.
This has been the Author's Lab with me, Robert Batista. My mission is to give creative people a platform to show you who they are. One of my short stories, My Baby Has No Name, can be read for free online at spillwords.com. My guest has been Tommy Anderson. Make sure you pick up his captivating book, Haboob Wind. Thank you so much, Tommy, and everybody, for being my guest on the Author's Lab.